Classical composer and jazz trumpeter Hannibal has been celebrating and commemorating the African-American experience through music and words for well over four decades. His work has been commissioned and performed by symphonies and orchestras around the country, including the Philadelphia Chamber Orchestra, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. Hannibal's One Land, One River, One People, selections from Veil 2 and Veil 3, will be performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Stefan Denev, tonight at 8 o'clock as part of the opening of the orchestra's three-week stint at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. It will be performed along with Beethoven's Symphony No. 9, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Hannibal to the roundtable this morning. Hannibal, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you in our studios.
Good morning. Thank you.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to Saratoga and doing this particular work?
I think it's the answer to a lifelong prayer to be able to compose a work like this and have it played by musicians of the caliber of the Philadelphia Orchestra. So I think the stars have aligned, and it is the answer to a long-held prayer.
Give us a sense of what you wanted to create in the composition. This is part of a larger work. What were you looking to accomplish in its creation?
I wanted humans to have not a new look at our existence, but to have a deeper look into the miracle of life, into the miracle of ourselves, and in particular to take a closer look at the fact that we are divine beings, not creatures without connection, direct connection to the Creator.
You are both a composer as well as a trumpeter, and does one bleed into the other? Are they two different things, or do they very much mesh together?
Rachmaninoff said that composing is different from playing. I find many similarities in the creative sense. When I pick up my instrument, I actually have no idea of what I will play, but I have an idea of the feeling that I want to play, the story that I want to tell. Ultimately, it's a story that I would like to convey, and it generally has the sense to do with my wanting humans to really take a deeper look at what we are, who we are, what we're capable of, which is endless. Our possibilities, our mind, everything is connected to the mind. Everything that exists is connected to the mind. There's no separation between the contents of the mind and the contents of the dust of a dying star. I want us to really see just how extraordinary we are, and to try and move past the archaic thinking of I'm this tall, I'm that short, I'm this color, I'm that color. I want with the music, when I play and write, for us to move beyond that, because there's something really very spectacular about the human phenomenon.
Why do you think we as a people are not better at looking at that and understanding the power that we have within?
It's fear. It's fear, and it takes work. It takes the kind of work that many are afraid to encounter, to look at the divine of ourselves, to look at the flaws of ourselves. But it's fear, And coupled with that fear is a sense of others wanting to dominate this power that we have and that we are. But you can't dominate it. It was obvious with Hitler and Mussolini and all of those that needed to be loved, that you can't dominate the human soul, the human spirit. It's beyond human domination.
So how does music, and specifically your music, aid in that, do you think, of allowing people to, both in your playing and your composing, to understand other possibilities and to move beyond the fear?
The opening of One Land begins with the Creator saying, light moving, light streaming, light pouring out of itself into you, light moving throughout the endless realm into the pores of you. You have come from the light. Light you are, now veiled in a skin of benevolent wonder, a tapestry of divine mystery. Of cosmic dust your spirit was made, and the infinite stars are the mirrors to your soul. As a little boy on the fields of my grandmother's farm, I was always fascinated with the nature. The sky was my best friend. And that's where I began to understand my connection, the human connection to creation.
So when people attend this opening night, will you be playing, or are you just going to be watching?
No, I won't be playing, but I'm sure I'll be shouting. I'm pretty sure of that, and I hope others, if they feel the desire to be moved to shout, that they will as well. I'm a firm believer in that passage that says, make a joyful noise unto the Lord. I really believe in that.
There is an intimacy of jazz and jazz performing, and certainly with you and an instrument. What is it like to see the work that you've been working on, created by this incredible orchestra and this big sound coming from the stage?
It's beyond words, because to initially get the information and to try and construct the imagery in the piece that I see, while I'm doing it, I wrote the opening to Veil 2, the Blue, I call it, a tribute to the great form of music called the blues, and to the great form that Bach was so eloquent with, called the fugue. So I created a word called the blue, and it opens with this fierce string section based on a 24-bar blues in the key of C minor, with a 8-bar turnaround. That's old blues vernacular there. But at any rate, the intensity of it is so extraordinary. And I wrote that under a pecan tree. Every note, it scares me now to think that I would ever have to do that again. I don't think I would try to do it again. But every note just came out, and I didn't know what it would sound like, because once I wrote it, it left my mind, and I didn't revisit it until I heard it at rehearsal. And so to answer your question, when I heard that, what I hadn't heard in some time, to hear the orchestra, the string section play it like that was, I can't describe it. It's like looking at all these notes that were in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's like looking at them again as they're being played. I can't explain it.
So in reading about you, and I'm hoping this is a true story, because it seems like a great story. But so you've been playing for a long time, and it was ultimately Charles Mingus and John Lennon who talked you into composing.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't want to grow up a stranger to my children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to stop touring as I was, which was very frequent at the time. And I was speaking with Mingus, and I said, you know, what can I do? And between eating perfectly roasted chicken on 7th Avenue and a gulp of orange juice, he said, well, just start writing, you know, as though you can't figure that out. And and John's son and my oldest son are the same age, so we shared a great deal of information, mostly about diapers and where the best deal was to buy a diaper at that time. But at one point he did mention to me that his writing allowed him to not be a stranger to his son. So I took all of that into account, and my prayer was that I could start to compose more. I had been writing to some extent, but the American Composers Orchestra called me in and commissioned me to do African Portraits, which started it all.
And is there a special skill that you had to learn in composing for a full orchestra?
Well, my initial teacher, Mr. James A. Wilson, in the 8th grade, taught me enough to be able to figure out what I needed to execute what I desired to orchestrate and compose. And then I got what I call the Bible of composing, of orchestration. It's Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's book, The Principles of Orchestration.
Mm-hmm.
So between that and the library and the information I had inside of me, I'm able to find what it is that I need. I don't think that the conservatory and I would have been a great fit, because my initial encounter with the conservatory was very unpleasant, and it was more of them wanting to indoctrinate me with what they felt composition was and what, you know, who the great composers were. And I appreciate the Mozart effect, but it was John Coltrane that saved my life, and the music of T-Bone Walker, whom I had the pleasure of playing with as a teenager.
I find that word indoctrinated interesting, because you can see, this is what we want you to become, instead of this is what we're going to give you the tools so you can become what you need to be.
Mm.
A big difference. And a long way from sitting under a pecan tree.
Writing 24 bar blues in the key of Z minor.
You were speaking of nature earlier, but I mean, does it help in being in a natural setting when you're writing such a work?
When I begin with an idea, or I'm given an idea, a concept to write about, I often go to the forest where I can have my little tent, a gallon of water, and total isolation from the world and much of the madness of the world. So that's where I write, often in a little tent in the woods, a pine forest of Rosanke, Texas, and there I can hear all that I'm given to do. The Creator gives me my marching orders. Sometimes it takes a day for me to clear my head of the world. Sometimes it takes 4 or 5 days of just being still, being quiet, and then it comes. It begins to flow. It's like a waterfall. It's an extraordinary feeling, and I'm happy to say that people feel that when they hear the music. They can feel a lot of these processes that are I go through when I write this music. Every note, there's not a note that shouldn't be there.
It seems fitting that your piece will be played with the Ode to Joy.
Well, there's a beautiful story about that that I still find extraordinary. When I was 17, my 17th birthday, my mother prepared a meal for me, and we were sitting together real quietly, and I was, of course, at 17, as we all probably are, scared to death of life, of what the heck we gonna do, how we gonna do it. And I just asked, I said, "Mom, do you think my name will ever appear next to Beethoven's?" And she was very irritated and said, "Of course, one day his name will appear next to yours." And when I got the advertisement, Ode to Joy at Hannibal, it sent chills through my body, you know, through my soul, that this extraordinary human being would have that much confidence and love in her son, who at that point, I must say, had quite remarkable musical skills.
Well, it is Ode to Joy and Hannibal, opening night at SPAC tonight at 8 o'clock. And you can find out more information by going to SPAC.org, SPAC.org. Hannibal's One Land, One River, One People selections from Veil 2 and Veil 3 will be performed by the orchestra. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program this morning. Have a beautiful night.
Thank you so much.
Once again, Hannibal's One Land, One River, One People selections from Veil 2 and Veil 3 will be performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Stefan Deneve, tonight at 8 o'clock. You can find out more information by going to SPAC.org, SPAC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.